again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of The Big Red Bus. And in today's episode, we are joined by the GOAT, Will Gottlieb of CHGO fame, as he takes his first ride on the BRB with Doug and I. We have a fantastic conversation on a wide variety of Bulls topics. I always called Will and his former podmate, our mutual friend, Mark Kay, the Simon and Garfunkel Bulls podcasters, obviously with Will playing the part of the talented songwriter Paul Simon, and Mark playing the part of Art Garfunkel, the guy with the really high voice. I hope you enjoyed this bus ride with Will. One word of note, we are giving away an iconic image on May 31st. This is a picture suitable for framing of Joakim Noah winning his Defensive Player of the Year award. I will post the pic of the picture on my Twitter timeline. If you are interested in getting in the lottery at the end of this month, it's completely free. Just send me an email to credfred@gmail.com. credfred@gmail.com. You will automatically be assigned a ticket in the Noah lottery with a chance to win this incredible piece of art. This is a thank you to our loyal listeners. Over the next few weeks, Doug and I will be doing draft prep as the beloved Bulls pick at number 11. And now, onto the bus ride with the GOAT, Will Gottlieb. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, I see the great one, Doug Tonis, but just a few rows back on the bus, do we have a treat for the listeners today? We have the great Will Gottlieb, the GOAT from CHGO and all the great things they do over there. How you doing, brother?
You guys, I'm great. I'm really happy to be here. I think we're all just brothers at this point, so I'm thrilled to be with you guys.
Well, I can't tell you how excited we are to have you on. I will admit this. I wouldn't have done it while Mark was still a part of the podcast, but your show that you did with Mark was one of my must listens, one of my favorite things that I always look forward to every week for your intelligence, your just sound insights, and then, of course, the laugh track with Mark. But it was so great to have you two together. I'm so devastated about the breakup.
I'm pretty devastated too, especially because he just made me sound way smarter in comparison. So it's been rough the last few weeks without him. Obviously wishing him the best with his new baby and his family. But of course really missed doing that with him because it was a blast for me too.
I'm going to lay out a prediction right now. You guys were the Simon and Garfunkel of like Bulls podcast. You obviously Paul Simon and Mark was Garfunkel. But I do predict you guys will eventually get back together and do some great things. So
I'm hoping so.
I feel that's going to happen when his interest gets reignited. But let's start out with the first question. We're so excited to have you on. We have so many questions for you as one of the elite beat writers who's always in the locker room. Doug, why don't you start out with the first question that you had outlined for the great Will Gottlieb?
Sure. My first thought is I've been maybe the biggest detractor I know of this front office for as long as I can imagine. And Will, I just wanted to chat with you and say, what's your confidence in this front office? Like right now, how confident are you that they can actually put in any plan over any length of time to get this team out of mediocrity?
I mean, I think the first question you have to ask there is like, do they even want to do that? And that's where like, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, like AK coming out and saying, things need to change. This was not good enough. That was the first time we've heard him kind of admit defeat in that way. And so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but you look at the past 3 years, like I'm not saying there hasn't been any good moves. There's clearly been some hits, right? Caruso was a home run. Io in the second round was a home run. Even like the DeRozan contract, I think was an overpay. You give up a first round pick for a guy who's a free agent and you kind of have to offload salary from the Vooch trade, which was also an overpay. So obviously there have been some misses, but I think there have been some hits too. And you want to believe in a front office that, did have a vision that put together a team that was successful for 60 games. But, that was 3 years ago now, and not having done anything to kind of, whether it's fully reset course or even just like help the current group kind of keep themselves afloat. The fact that they just haven't done anything is really hard to justify in my mind. And so you know, like I said, I do want to give them the benefit of the doubt now that they appear to be, you know, thinking that things need to change. But it's going to be kind of a wait and see approach for me, because, you know, I've kind of gone over this a bunch on our show, and just like writing, it's very difficult for them to make any changes without making some really massive kind of sweeping changes. And so are they going to be willing to do that? Are they going to be willing to take that step back that I think, you know, 99% of the basketball world kind of agrees is the right move at this point? But for whatever reason, Arturis just hasn't seen the light yet. So like I said, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, but we've got about a month and a half, 2 months here before I can really get a sense of what's going to happen. And I think the first thing that does happen will really indicate for me, like whether it's a small free agent signing or who they even draft at 11, I think that will kind of be an indicator of what direction they want to go. And I think that will give me a better sense of how much more faith I should put into them, if any.
I'm gonna tell you what's going to happen. Here's your preview. They're going to trade Zach LaVine at the lowest value he's ever had. They're going to re-sign DeMar DeRozan to a contract you hate. And then they're going to just rearrange deck chairs. That's going to be the offseason.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I would be very disappointed, and I would very much disagree with that approach. Like I said, I don't want to be critical of the next direction until I know what it is, but I am very much anticipating like less changes to happen than what AK kind of alluded to. And I would really disagree with that. I've been very vocal about thinking that this thing needs to be kind of torn down to the studs, and they need to start over and pick a real direction, because this sort of floating in the middle is just not any way to be in the NBA. And I think, Doug, you had a great tweet a couple of weeks ago that I think was spot on, which was like, a lot of the Bulls fans out there are kind of too late to understanding like what direction should go, what direction the team needs to go as far as trades. And that like we're past the point of them capitalizing on DeRozan or Zach or Vooch, obviously. And even Caruso's value, I think, goes down now that he only has 1 year left. And so you do have to start looking at Kobe and Io and, you know, really reshaping the direction of the team if you want to set yourself up with assets. So that's the direction I would go with it. I'm skeptical that that's the direction AK will go, but even sort of minor moves, or I guess not minor moves, but moves towards that direction, whether or not they include Io and Kobe this summer, like that will really kind of give me a better answer of where this is going. But I totally agree with you. I'm not expecting much, even though I really believe that there should be major changes at this point.
To follow up on Doug's question or his point, you know, in true Acme form, they've kind of identified Zach LaVine as a problem, and they got to unload him. That's their goal this summer. I think that's their primary goal, is to get him off the roster, as Doug correctly surmised, at the low point in terms of value. My counter is, isn't it better off for the Bulls to just wait until next season, maybe at the trade deadline when he's had a chance to build up his or improve his value? I'd like your opinion on Zach LaVine. The odds are, do you feel like he will be traded, number one? And number two, in your opinion, Will, aren't they better off with that path that I kind of described of bring him back, he's a professional, and he's going to play well? I think that he's been like unfairly maligned as this disaster, and it's kind of quasi-ridiculous, but, you know, very true to form for Acme, you know, blame all the problems on the previous front office.
Yeah, I'm very much in the middle on Zach. Like, obviously, I think he's a super talented player. I think just in general, the idea that like guys are losing players is a little bit overblown. And it's like, it's not all Zach's fault that this team has been a disaster for the 7 or 8 years that he's been here. So I think he could help a lot of teams as a talent, but also you have to factor in that massive contract and the new CBA. Like, teams are not interested in $43 million for their third best player at best. And so I have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to get any positive value for Zach at this point. I mean, it would be pretty impressive to me if they were. I think there's probably a little bit more interest than I gave them credit for after the trade deadline passed, but I'm not expecting them to get much. And I agree with you that like I would prefer to sign and trade DeRozan or even just let him walk for nothing, because that opens up space to where you don't have to sell low on LaVine or attach an asset to move him. You let Zach and Vooch kind of run around and put up big box score numbers and hope that entices a team at the trade deadline when, you know, Vooch has a year and a half left and Zach has 2.5 years left on their contracts instead of 3 or 3.5 if they were to have done it last trade deadline. And in the meantime, like, capitalize on Caruso, capitalize on DeMar if you can. Even like some of the, you know, role players on this team, like if Torrey Craig picks up his option, that could be a sweetener in a deal that, you know, helps the Bulls get a first round pick if they're able to attach him to something else, or even a second round pick. Like, just they need to value assets in that way. And I don't think that the front office has done a good enough job with that. I mean, even not trading Drummond for a second or 2 seconds at this last deadline is like, why are you hanging on to a backup center that's going to walk for nothing just to make it to the play-in tournament? It doesn't make sense to me. And so I agree with you. Like, I think it's probably best for Zach, and I think it's probably best for the Bulls to kind of initiate that divorce. But I wouldn't do it just to do it. Like, I would want to try to get value. And maybe you can't do it, but at least you've given yourself the opportunity to now get him back on the court, to prove to teams that he's healthy, to prove to teams that he can still put up big numbers. And then with a little bit less time on his contract, maybe teams are, and you know, after these new CBA rules have kind of come into play, maybe teams are a little bit less afraid of them, or are willing to go into that second apron anyway. And maybe they can get something. Like I said, not really expecting it either way, but that's the direction I would go. I wouldn't like attach something to Zach to get rid of him. I'd rather see if you can improve his value, and maybe you can, maybe you can't, but like I said, at least you're kind of going from a process of trying to get value where you can. Cause I think that's really what it comes down to, is like this front office group has not really prioritized value in the form of assets, whether it's contracts, whether it's draft picks, whether it's young players. And I think they kind of need to get back to that if they have any hope or chance of getting, you know, getting themselves back on track towards being a top four team in the East, let alone being championship contenders, like AK said he wanted at the postseason availability.
Really quick follow-up to what I was saying before on Zach. As someone who was in the locker room all year, and you saw the interactions between Zach and his teammates, do you buy that he was a detriment to the team this year? Do you feel like this would be a problem if he was in, you know, started the season with the Bulls next year? Or do you think that was kind of overblown?
That's a tough one. I mean, Zach was not really in the locker room too much after the injuries, so it's hard to say. I mean, I know these guys are all professionals and they would like do their best to work together if that was the situation at hand. Like, it kind of reminds you of the like Justin Fields, Caleb Williams debate where people were like, well, we want Justin and we're not going to be happy with a new quarterback. Like, they're going to get over it. They're going to be okay. You're going to like be a professional and do your job with whoever's there to, you know, on your side as your teammate. I think that would be the case with the Bulls too. But I also think that, like, you know, there's a reason why Zach's camp, whether it was like a firm trade request or kind of that quasi, like we would be open to a trade thing, that came out. Like, I think he's ready to move on. I think the Bulls are clearly ready to move on. I think that's probably long-term what's in the best interest of both of those. But I also don't think like Zach wants to go play for another team that's like a bottom feeder. I think he kind of wants to reset his image and perspective around the league so that he has a better chance of going to a team where he can win. Cause I do think he wants to be a winner. He wants to be on a winning team. And I think just it's becoming clear. I mean, Josh Longstaff just left. There was just the Woj bomb that one of the Bulls' top assistant coaches left. Obviously, Chris Fleming was let go. Mo Cheeks decided to move up to or move off of the daily coaching staff. So there's changes in this thing. And Mark Eversley was just noted as one of the candidates for the Pistons job. Like, I think there's a sense that like this thing is kind of past its last legs. Like, there are going to be some changes, and I would imagine that people who have decision-making power in this group, whether it's on the coaching staff or front office, but are below AK, where he's kind of the final say, I think they probably recognize the direction of this thing and kind of want to get out before it really burns to the ground, because it is trending that way, and they can salvage it. But I think going back to the Zach thing, like I think they would be all right with Zach coming back. I think that's probably what should happen from a value standpoint. But I do think long-term, they probably need to move on from him, and he probably still wants to get out of here. So ultimately, I think that's what will happen. I just wouldn't be in a rush to do it just so you can bring back DeMar and kind of run this thing back again.
Yeah. One thing I think is interesting is you brought up this point of like, they've tended to overpay for things and you brought up, you know, DeMar and Vooch, where they got kind of good players. And I think they eventually initially came in and said, just who are the most talented guys we can get, and we're just going to pay the cost to get them. And Vooch and DeMar were like those guys on the market, and Lonzo Ball, you know, as well. And that was maybe their kind of strategy. And they paid maybe a little bit too much, certainly too much for Vooch, maybe too much for DeMar, though DeMar has been really fantastic. And Lonzo probably would have been fine had it not been for the injury. And now you noted, you know, earlier before Fred's follow-up, the idea that they kind of need to get back to this, we need to gain assets. You know, one of the things I noted is, you know, at any given point in time, a lot of teams in the NBA aren't really trying to win. Like the Bulls were maybe the second or third worst team of the teams that were actively trying to win and not just trying to get draft picks. You know, like the teams below them were like way below them and were just kind of actively losing, you know, whatever. And so kind of like looking from that approach, you know, they seem like they want to bring back DeMar to kind of roll this forward. I know you said you don't agree with that. Assuming we do go down that kind of path, we're not going to add these assets onto it. What do you think we're going to do, like with DeMar, Pat, the luxury tax? You know, clearly, Acme said we're not going to go into the tax unless we're a top four team. I think we would agree, at least on this group of three people, that there's no way the Bulls are going to look like a top four team in the East at the end of this offseason, barring some miracle we can't see. And so if they're going to have to say the tax line, how are they going to fit in any changes into this? Do you think they, you know, will consider stretching Lonzo? Do you think they have to save money on a Zach trade? Do you think they would like waive and stretch Javon Carter? Do you think there's a salary dump they can do? Maybe walk us through like what kind of options you think are there that would allow us to kind of duck the tax and kind of go down the plan we think they're most likely to pursue.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough because there aren't a lot of options. And that's why I keep saying, like, in order to make changes, you're gonna have to make big changes. What I mean by that is you're probably gonna have to move one of, if not both, of Zach and DeMar. You know, this $80 million over 2 years, $40 million annually figure that's been kind of reported by Casey and Cowley for DeMar is a massive number. And like, I think that just makes it really difficult to run things back. So I just got my cap sheet up and I wrote about this in more detail at CHGO. So if people are interested, they go find that. Shameless plug there. But if they try to run it back with Zach LaVine on the roster and they are able to get DeMar back for $40 million and Patrick Williams back at the qualifying offer at the 12.9 QO, which honestly, I think he's probably going to get a bigger offer than that. But let's just assume for the sake that he stays at the $12.9 million qualifying offer. If they did that and did not yet stretch Lonzo, they would be $18.5 million over the tax. So obviously that's not happening. What happens if you waive and stretch Lonzo? You've got a $7.1 million cap hit in each of the next three seasons. So if they did that, they would cut that tax bill down from $18.5 million over to $4.3. So even if all you do is bring back the team and waive and stretch Lonzo to create that space, you're still going to be over the tax, which means that's just not going to happen. So you have to make other moves. I think trading Lonzo actually could be kind of an interesting way to do it because, you know, he's an expiring contract. His money is being paid, I think like 80 or 90% by insurance. So yes, it still hits on the cap sheet, but it doesn't necessarily cost the owner of the team any money. So for cheaper teams like the Bulls, that could be really interesting and valuable. Maybe you attach another piece to that, whether it's the first round pick that they just got, 11th overall, or Javon Carter, salary like that. Now you're able to bring back some player making a little bit more money while also clearing out some space. So that could be an option. But again, that still keeps you over the tax. I think ultimately they're going to have to move Zach or DeMar or get DeMar on a discount. That discount for DeMar comes in the form of, yeah, I'll take $30 million or $25 million a year. But in order to do that, I'm going to have to get a 3 or 4 year contract. Like that would be a huge mistake in my mind. Just obviously he's 35 years old going into next season. But also I think he's just so good that he automatically makes you a play-in team. And it's really hard to get better at that point if, you know, you just are stuck in the middle. So I think Zach has to be the first domino to fall. If they do want to run it back, I think that's going to be a really big challenge because teams that have cap space or teams that are going to be in the star market are going to be more interested in Paul George or LeBron or James Harden even than Zach LaVine. And so those dominoes are going to have to fall before I think the Bulls are going to be able to offload Zach. And if that's the case, then they're going to kind of miss the deadline where they have to make a decision on DeMar. I think just by the way that the timeline works, like they may end up losing DeMar before they can offload Zach, just because they're not going to get stuck $15, $18, $12, $10 million in the luxury tax without knowing they can move Zach first. So even if they would prefer to keep DeMar and move Zach, like that may not be possible just by the fact that free agency starts before they're likely to find a new home for Zach. And like I said, Patrick could get, you know, a $15, $16, $20 million offer from a team. Like, are the Bulls going to be willing to match that and retain him as a restricted free agent? Maybe it's a team like the Pistons or the Magic who have cap space, and now you can't really pull off a sign and trade because those teams can just absorb that money. They don't need to send out salary in order to do so. So I think if they can move Zach quickly, that's probably their best bet in order to run it back. But otherwise, they're at risk of, you know, going into the tax or losing DeMar and or Patrick before they can make a decision on Zach. And so that's why I think they have to be willing to find a new home, whether it's a sign and trade or just letting DeMar walk, because that seems like the only feasible way for them to ultimately get back to a point of competing for a higher seed than, you know, 8, 9, 10, 6 even, which I think is probably a little bit aspirational. So yeah, I'm really curious to see kind of how the order of operations plays out. But my hunch is it's going to be very difficult to move Zach, and that kind of forces you into decisions with DeMar and Patrick a little bit sooner than they would necessarily hope.
So quick question and follow up on this one, Will, because I think we're all in agreement here that they don't want to. I think we're all in agreement. We want to do a full rebuild. They're not going to do that. They're probably going to try to move Zach, as Doug said. And, you know, let's assume they do create this space. They create enough space to sign DeMar and P-Will. I want to focus on Patrick Williams specifically because I do agree with you. I think he's going to get over the qualifying offer. What is the dollar amount that a team offers Patrick Williams that would make you say, I'm not doing that? You know, 4 years at what per year? What is that dollar amount that you're walking away from Patrick Williams?
I mean, this is going to sound kind of exorbitant, but like to me, the goal should be to like keep your young players, and whether or not Patrick can become a star, I think that ship has sailed for the most part. Like, I don't want to completely rule it out, but it's been 4 years and he really hasn't shown much more than flashes on the offensive end. I don't really necessarily see like Kawhi Leonard 2.0 in the making anymore. But at that same point, like big wings, 6'7", 6'8", who can defend and shoot the three at a 40% clip, that's a valuable archetype of player that I wouldn't want to just move on from for nothing. And so like you look at some of those other players around the league, similar build, similar play style. Jaden McDaniels is making like $26 million next year. I wouldn't want to pay Patrick that much, but like even if it's $20, $22 million, I would rather have Patrick for 4 years at that number than DeMar for 1 or 2 years at $40 million. And I think they may end up having to choose between the two. So I would be okay with keeping Patrick just because I think there's more upside. There's more potential for that to become an asset of a contract as opposed to DeMar at $40 million for 2 years to just kind of keep you in the middle. There's a chance they end up trading DeMar, but you know, even at that $40 million number, that's just, I don't see teams being like that excited to jump on that. And maybe as an expiring, it becomes a little bit more enticing, but I see, you know, Patrick at $20, $22 million as potential to be more of an asset. And also it's just like more in line with the direction that I think this team should go. They should be moving more towards their younger players. They should be, you know, seeing what they can make out of this guy who, you know, has had plenty of opportunity to be a good role player. And, you know, has been successful at that at times, has struggled at other times, but I still think like a core of Kobe, Io, Patrick, like there's not a ton of upside there, but I'd be more interested in seeing what that upside is than kind of running it back with the same group that we know can't work. So it sounds like a lot of money and it is a lot of money, but I would rather keep him for a little bit more just because I think he has a chance to be better at $22 million next year or the year after than DeMar has at $40 million next year or the year after, if that makes sense.
Yeah, one thing I think is interesting about that is with the cap potentially spiking at the end of the, is it the 2025 season? So at the end of next season, it spikes up. I think that's correct. with the new TV money coming in, and there's cap smoothing now, so it can only go up by 10%. But if it's going to go up 10% a year, every year, so if you sign him now for 4 years, there's going to be three 10% spikes, and that $20 million is going to be, you know, progressively less and less. Like that'll probably be the mid-level exception by his final year on that contract. And I think that's one thing to think about. Any deal you sign that's 4 years long now, is that's going to be probably true. And the shorter deals are not going to get that same benefit. And also to your point of just having the difference to just trying to go with the young guys and see what happens versus, you know, what are you really doing here? You're ninth. You're going to overpay DeMar to try and like grasp and claw and hang on to ninth. Like, doesn't seem like a strategy that's overly exciting, I think, to most Bulls fans. I don't think are very excited about that, or at least most diehard Bulls fans. Maybe, you know, the common fan who just catches a game here or there, wants to go to the United Center a couple times a year, maybe that person is more happy with just like, I want a better team and to see some guys who have brand names that I know. But I think for people who follow us and do our show, that's probably not a really exciting take on that. So I'm kind of with you there in that I think it will cost about $20 million. I'm not excited about Pat necessarily, but I would love to ask you, if they do just go with that core, like to this front office that feels like they want to just try and grasp the hope of playoffs, right? Like they clearly do not want to tank. They clearly do not want a full rebuild. They clearly want to try to win still. Like all their comments are about still trying to win this year. If they do lose DeMar and keep Pat, like how many wins do you think this team is? If they, and maybe if they let DeMar go, they can keep Zach at that point. So say it's Zach, Vooch, DeMar, Kobe, Io, you know, swapping out maybe some minor guys, but, you know, you're not bringing in anyone major. Maybe you have enough room for the mid-level exception. Then how good is this team with that roster, do you think?
Like low 30s in wins at best. I mean, this team overperformed this year and won, what, 39 games? The reason they overperformed so much is because DeMar was so incredible in clutch games. They played, or I think they won 27 clutch games this year. Like, I don't know, maybe this year more than any other, I kind of gained an appreciation for just how much DeMar carries this team on the offensive end. Yes, you're missing Zach LaVine, but and maybe you kind of get some of those wins back by introducing him back into the lineup. But I mean, you're looking at a team that was effectively the same team that they put together 4 years ago before the DeMar and Lonzo trades, that was a 35, 36 win team at best. So I think that's kind of the same area where they would fall. I think some of these teams in the East who are behind them are probably going to jump them. Same thing that happened last year with the Pacers and the Magic. Like, I don't know if the Hornets are like quite there yet, but like they got some nice pieces. They've got some interesting young guys that I think are going to continue to get better. They seem to be like a more serious franchise now with the way that they're coaching staff and new front office has come together. The Brooklyn Nets probably are going to continue on the same path that they are, and maybe they end up trading Mikal Bridges and going the other way. Same with the Hawks. It's just kind of hard to know like how these teams will start to perform with whatever roster they start to put together, but the teams in front of them I don't think are going anywhere, and so I don't see a lot of ability for them to jump up, and I don't see them really changing their ability, like even within those without DeMar. I think it's more likely that they go towards the bottom. And maybe at that point, like you are kind of more interested in keeping your pick. If you're the 11th seed or 12th seed near the deadline, I would be pretty surprised if they kind of went for it as opposed to potentially giving up the 11th pick next year to the Spurs, which they owe from that DeRozan deal. So yeah, I would say like low 30s at best, which maybe sounds kind of harsh, but like I think that's just how valuable DeRozan was, particularly in the clutch with what he's able to do, and just generating good offense on a possession-to-possession basis. Like they won't have that without him. And Kobe has gotten a lot better. Like I said, reintroducing Zach, maybe that helps you a bit. But Vooch is getting older, and he was obviously really performed really poorly this past season. You know, maybe your young guys can start to help you out, but I just don't see this team achieving at a high level. And so even if you don't like commit to verbally tanking, I think just not having DeMar really sets you back so much that you might end up doing it by accident. And I think ultimately that's a really good thing, especially when you have the potential to retain that pick that I mentioned before.
Will, I get the vibe that you're a big Dalen Terry guy. You know, I've found him incredibly frustrating. I just don't think you can shoot like that as a guard and have a future in the league. I understand he plays with a lot of energy. I love that. I think he clearly has good vision as a passer. But, I mean, goodness gracious, just your shot's got to look better. Even your misses, some of them are just, you know, terrible. What is it about Dalen Terry that you feel should give me solace that this guy's going to be a contributor as a rotation player next season?
So I think some of the tools are really interesting. I was high on Dalen in that draft class because I thought his passing vision was really just kind of special for like a big guard. His ability to kind of like keep the ball moving, kind of be that glue guy or that connective tissue on offense. Obviously, he's got great size. He's put on a lot of muscle and has been a really good defensive player at times, a little bit foul prone, and still kind of, you know, more of an on-ball threat just with his kind of awareness at this point of how NBA defenses work. So I like some of the tools. I agree with you, though. Like, without that jump shot, I think it's really hard to unlock a lot of that stuff. And so, you know, if he's not generating closeout opportunities, it's hard for him to get into the lane where he can put that passing on display. He's not really talented enough as a ball handler or as a shot creator to where he can kind of get his own offense without somebody creating it for him. And I think that makes it a little bit difficult to, you know, keep him on the floor when he's not forcing defenses to, you know, close out to him or to rotate over to him or to even, you know, pay attention to him at all because he's standing in the corner waiting for a pass that's not going to come. Or if it does, then he's going to, you know, maybe hit a three, maybe airball it. So I think, you know, the tools are there. The shooting will very much unlock a lot of that stuff. And I do think he's made some strides. I've talked to him a bunch about how much he's working with new shooting coach and director of player development, Peter Patton. So I do think he's putting the work in. I think he's just pretty far away from that still. But the last 20 games of the season, like, he really did kind of look like an NBA level defender. He's good in transition. So I like some of the stuff there, but it's just hard to see it all come together without, you know, he doesn't have to be a 40% 3-point shooter on high volume, but he does have to be able to consistently knock down, whether it's like a 35% clip, just an open three to keep the defense honest. I think that would really go a long way to helping unlock some of his skills.
No doubt. But, you know, I'm a really big believer. I watch guys and study guys before games and see how they act before games, who takes this seriously, getting ready for the game. I've just went to too many games and seen him. And correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe what I've seen out of him is incorrect. But he's got a very jovial, joking, you know, having a lot of fun, a lot of laughs in pregame, and not a lot of focus on, let me get these shots up. I saw him air ball threes in pregame. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Do you do that? Do you go there and watch these guys practice and warm up? Do you feel like some guys are a lot more serious about getting better and other guys are a little bit more laissez-faire? Am I wrong in that critique?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right in general. I disagree, though, on Dalen in particular. You know, he's definitely a goofball. He's definitely like an eccentric personality. He's outgoing. He's joking around. He's like yelling and screaming and making fun of guys in the locker room. But I do think he works really hard. And, you know, I sit there and watch pregame too, like just courtside sitting right behind him while he's shooting. And he's like yelling at himself when he misses and stuff. I think he kind of knows what like star NBA players are supposed to be like. And I think he tries to emulate that. It's obviously trying to kind of like not fake it until you make it, but he's trying to like put on that persona to where he's able to get to that point. And I think he definitely, you know, he jokes around, he has fun, but I do think he works hard and I do think he's gotten a lot better. Like his form to me looks a lot more, you know, mechanically sound. It looks a lot more consistent than it did his rookie year. But he's still a ways away with that jump shot. And I don't know if it is salvageable. I think they're doing the best they can, but he really is a ways away with it.
Well, we're going to switch to my favorite topic, Will. And I don't know if you know what my favorite topic is, but it's Nikola Vucevic. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but your buddy, your podcast partner, quit the Bulls, quit following them because he was so wrong on his take of Nikola Vucevic from a show that he and I did with Fred 3 years ago. And I was so dead on accurate with it that he just, instead of just admitting he was wrong, he just stopped following the Bulls. That's the real underlying reason. So 3 years ago, I said, this trade is such a disaster. It's going to put us in a position to keep making win-now moves, which will not get us out of the playoffs. We're not going to win more. We're not going to win a series. And we're going to have, at most, 2 first-round losses. We didn't even hit that. We only got 1 first-round loss. And then we're going to be trying to rebuild with no assets while being completely capped out and no maneuverability, which is exactly where we are. And Mark's response to that was the Vucevic trade was actually great, and the only problem was we did not package Patton Ayo for Jeremy Grant to try to go even more in the win now, you know, direction. So that's my monologue piece out of the way. I just wanted to throw Mark under the bus a little bit.
Under the big red bus.
Under the big red bus. Mark's used to being thrown under the big red bus. He won't mind. But just jokes aside, with Vooch, like, I think everyone now is kind of with me that this trade didn't work out. You know, I might be the person who is the things that worked out the worst out of anyone. Like, maybe I'm the most vocal about it. But I think everyone now kind of agrees this didn't go in our favor. We overpaid. We didn't get what we hoped we would get. And ignoring all the reasons beyond that, what do you think is going on with the front office, I guess, in the way they continue to commit to him? You know, like, it just, do you feel like they're just trying to, I guess, squeeze blood out of an orange or whatever the saying is? Like what is going on with them that they are still committed to him, that they re-signed him, that they still think this is a great idea? Are they the only ones left that still really believe that he's going to be better? You know, I don't know if you follow some of the tweets I had about him, but like, he was on pace for one of the worst three-point shooting seasons in history of a guy putting up his volume. He was like 20th percentile as like a post scorer, like relative to other post scorers. He was had the most pick-and-roll man possessions in the league and was like, I think, like 40th percentile as a finisher in those. So he's like not performing well there. Like he's just really bad on offense. And then defensively, I think fundamentally, if like he knows where he should be and he's okay there, but athletically, he clearly doesn't challenge shots. He's slow to rotate. He's got limitations. You know, so with those things, but we still seem completely committed to him as a starter. What do you think is just going on with how our front office and our coaching staff views Vooch as a player, and why we still seem to have this like large commitment to him? Or am I just totally way off base in my evaluation? And feel free to just to say, Doug, you're like way over the top. This is not true.
No, I mean, I think it's definitely gotten to that point where you like were right in the end. At the time, like, of the Vooch trade, I thought it was an overpay, but I appreciated the fact that they were kind of putting together a team that had a little bit more potential to be good. And I felt like it was the first step towards doing that. I think they kind of had a vision of Vooch and Lonzo and Zach stepping up to a higher level and Patrick stepping up to a higher level. And that kind of foundation of a team working. DeMar kind of fell into their laps at the end. Nobody was really interested in him for more than the mid-level exception. And the Bulls kind of swooped in with this massive offer and a sign and trade. And I think that kind of set the team into a little bit more of a like win now older veteran group than they maybe anticipated in the first place. But with all that said, like, yeah, it has not worked. Vooch, I think this past year in particular, his play declined to a point where he was kind of hurting the team at times. But if you look at like some of the numbers, he was also still probably, aside from DeRozan, like those post-ups, I wrote about this like towards the end of the season. I don't know if the numbers reflect it at the end, but like his post-ups and his plays where he would make passes out of post-ups were like higher efficiency shots than anything Ayo or Kobe was doing in the half court. So it was kind of the lesser of two evils, but I think that says more about the quality of, you know, offensive creation on your team than it does about Vooch. Like, Vooch clearly took a step back. And I think that's generally the problem with trading for guys that are kind of on the other side of their prime. Like, I don't really feel like that's a smart, you know, gamble to make. And that's why I think signing DeRozan to a big money deal at this point in his career is probably not a smart move, because there's more chance that he underperforms that value than that he overperforms it. Certainly he's earned it by the way that he's played the last 2 years, but last 3 years, but that's not the play you're going to get the next 2 years in his age 35 and age 36 season. So In general, I don't think that's a smart direction, as I've said a couple of times here now. But with Vooch in particular, like, yeah, he really kind of fell off a cliff. I think you need to insulate him defensively to where you're giving up a lot of corner threes because you're throwing so many bodies into the paint to take away drives. And that puts you in a situation where you're liable to give up a ton of points from beyond the arc. And with the fact that he can't make any threes and the team can't make any threes, it's very hard to offset that with getting the free throw line and not turning the ball over. I mean, it works 39 out of 82 times, basically. So, I think, you know, it's difficult. It's always difficult when you have a really expensive player that you've just committed to like give him, you know, a bench role behind a vet minimum guy in Drummond. But I do think there were times when Drummond was better, quite frankly. So, you know, this is the first time we saw Joe Colley reported a couple weeks ago that the Bulls were potentially going to be looking to move him. Another one of their bigger contracts that would open up some flexibility if they were able to do so. But I mean, I don't see a lot of teams being interested in his services at this point with the way that he has declined. So I think they might be stuck with him. And if that's the case, like, it is what it is. I think like the reinvestment is kind of the worst part. And I think I'm worried that they're going to make that same mistake with DeRozan here, as opposed to just kind of like letting him walk or pulling off a sign and trade if they can, because we've seen what happens. And what happens is the older player continues to decline, stops being as good as he used to be when he was an all-star. And all of a sudden you're stuck with kind of an albatross contract on your books that you can't move. And it becomes difficult to improve your team around the fringes when you've got so much money sunk into a couple of older players that aren't playing at the level that you're paying them to play at.
Yeah, I think one of the points that I've made about this too is it's where you are. Like if the Bulls were a 50-win team and they brought in DeMar or Vooch and you're like trying to win now, that's fine. When you try to bring in these guys past their prime, but you are a 30-win team, like you're too far away. Like that's why I just never liked the Vooch trade even at the beginning. Like I got what they were trying to do, but you're too far away to trade all your long-term assets for short-term assets when you're a 30-win team. And those assets are going to have a pretty short shelf life. Like you're just too far away to make that jump. And that's why I said there's no ceiling to it. It was like you could get to the first round twice, but then you're going to be just where we are. And so I think that was like one of the big challenges with this type of move, bringing in Vooch. And I guess maybe you're right. So do you feel that at all like they just thought like this move was such a big piece of what we did when we came in that we had to keep him to defend bringing him in altogether? Or do you think they're just like, no, this is our guy. Like we really believe in this guy. Or do you think there was a part of perception just kind of like crawled into like their thinking there? And I guess it's a two-parter and the second part's totally different. But the other thing is modern NBA offense, you know, and I know you know all this. It's like they found analytically you want to get into your shot faster, right? Like if you push the ball up the court quicker and if you start running your offense at 20 seconds, you're better off. You're going to get a better shot than if you go slow and run your offense with 16 seconds. And you think about trying to run the offense through the post, it's like very slow, right? Like it takes a while that guy to get position. Usually the entry pass takes a few seconds. Usually that guy's backing someone down for a few seconds and then he tries to dump off. And so, you know, often you end up with relatively poor shots if that post up doesn't yield a good shot because you used up so much clock time, you know, trying to generate that shot. And so another thing I kind of wonder about this front office, I guess maybe one is, do they let public perception guide their decisions too much? And that's why they brought back Vooch. And then two, like, are they missing out on like these like really modern NBA analytical trends of like you need to get into your offense faster. You need more shooters. You need mobile like defenders. Like Vooch is not any of these things that fit into the modern NBA analytical offense. He's like really like one of the worst case scenario type players because he can't defend anywhere. And, you know, theoretically, he could shoot threes, but that was only for 1 year in the pandemic year where there were no fans, and he never shot well outside of that year. So that's an anomaly. But he doesn't shoot threes himself. He slows down your offense. Like all these other things are like he's not a modern player, which is why it's also hard to move him. Do you buy into either of those faults of the front office, that they're just missing out on these analytical trends and that they let perception guide what they're doing?
So I think it's a complicated one. I think they kind of brought Vooch in, and you know, I've heard both AK and Eversley talk about this a little bit, but like, I think they wanted a kind of do-it-all center who could help be a facilitator, who could help kind of create a stabilized offensive half-court threat around Zach and Lonzo and Patrick and Kobe when they brought those guys in. And then, like I said, they kind of like DeRozan stumbled into their laps, and you know, they operate, DeRozan and Vooch operate in very similar parts of the court. Like I think in theory, Vooch is really good from the elbow as kind of like a passing hub, but he really hasn't been able to get set there because DeRozan's always there. And he doesn't really operate well as a floor spacer. You want the ball in his hands because he's the best offensive initiator that this team has. And so I think that there's just kind of a lot of duplicative skill sets there from the same parts of the court. And I think that makes it difficult, where now Vooch is kind of more relegated to either a post-up or a floor spacer. And I don't think he's necessarily great at either of those. And certainly he's gotten worse since the Bulls signed him. So I think that's part of it, that it just hasn't really worked as well as they would have hoped, because those guys kind of are, you know, a little bit redundant in their skill set. But in terms of bringing him back, like I think part of it has to be that they didn't want to lose the asset for nothing. Like the optics of trading two first round picks and a young player for a guy just to let him walk for nothing, you know, two seasons later, that probably looks pretty bad. And so maybe they're hoping they can eventually move him to recoup some of those assets. But again, you're just kind of kicking the can down the road while being, you know, not good enough to actually compete and not bad enough to actually get a high level player in the draft. And so I think that's, they've kind of built this team to be exactly where they are, and this is where they are. I don't think, like, the Vooch extension that they signed, I just don't really understand why they gave him so much. It didn't really seem like there were going to be other suitors for him on the market. And, you know, it's hard to say, we don't know exactly who would have been interested, but, and like the idea that you just pay somebody $1 more than the, you know, mid-level exception because they'll take the highest offer, I don't think that necessarily is true, because like in some situations, like I think with the DeRozan one, like you probably have to give him a serious chunk of money, more than the Lakers would at the mid-level exception, to keep him playing for a team that can't make the playoffs, to keep him, you know, with as the main guy in this situation, as opposed to going home to LA. So I think they wanted to pay him. I think they've claimed to be this like player-friendly organization that's putting players first, that's giving them player options, that's, you know, maybe overpaying them a little bit. And that just kind of, you're seeing they're paying the piper with that right now, right? They're in a situation where now they've got all these big contracts on their books and all this guaranteed money that they can't really move, because none of these guys are as good as the value that they've been given in terms of what their contract is. So I think they're just kind of like stuck in this cycle of not wanting to lose guys for nothing, not wanting to totally tear down and rebuild. And that just keeps them just good enough. And so I think it's kind of more about like their direction. Like they claim to know that they need to shoot more threes. They brought in a shooting specialist to be their player development guy. They brought in, or they like at their trade, at the end of the season press conference last year, they said, we understand we've been, you know, behind the eight ball shooting. We're like starting games in an 8-point hole because of how little threes we shoot and how, you know, inaccurate we are with those. So I think they kind of get it, but they're just not really willing to make the tough decisions that they need to in order to actually make changes. And when you're not willing to do that, it's hard to make any change. You're just in the situation where you're kind of running it back. You're doing the same thing over and over and hoping that there will be a different result. And as these guys get older and a little bit more injury prone and, you know, they lose a step, it's hard for guys like Kobe and Io to make up for that. Because as good as they were, they're like, if they were great players, if they were, you know, championship caliber, you know, options, like starters on that kind of a team, this team would have been better. They would have made the playoffs. They would have made, you know, some noise in the postseason. But that's just kind of the reality of the situation. Like, they're good, they're exciting, they're young. But to this point in their careers, and not to say that can't change, but they just haven't been good enough to overcompensate on their good contracts for the, you know, the poor play of the guys making a lot more money on this roster. And I think they're just stuck in that situation and unwilling to get out because getting out would require them to be pretty bad for probably a couple of years. And that's just not something they're willing to do.
I think we got time for one more real quick one. And Will, I can't thank you enough for your time today,
man. Yeah, of course.
But I do want to, as we bring the bus in, kind of shed maybe a positive ray of light here. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'd like to get your opinion on this. I just don't feel there's a massive delta between the Bulls and, I don't know, Indiana and the Knicks. Like, we played those teams. We beat those teams. The East is just not a good conference. The Heat are fading. Bucks are fading. Cavs are likely going to lose Mitchell. Sixers are a mess, and B is getting old quickly. If you get a Kobe-like jump from Patrick, if you get a mid-level exception signing like Dante DiVincenzo, if Vooch can just get back to his career average and three-point shooting, if you can get Lonzo off the books. I know there's a lot of things, but, you know, Kobe jumped, Io jumped last year. Like, are we really that far away from contending in this Eastern Conference if we get a little bit of luck and some of those other teams just keep on their current trajectory? What say you?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the front office's perspective on it too. Like, they did play well against some of the top teams in the East. You know, they got good wins, you know, against the Pacers and the Knicks this year. They played them well those last couple of games. So it's not like they are a complete disaster, but at the same point, like, they're not good enough to actually beat them consistently. And that's how you kind of end up in the middle. You have some good games, you have some bad games. You beat some good teams, you lose to some bad teams. That's just kind of how you end up in the middle. And so I think that that perspective is kind of the front office's fallacy that kind of keeps them in this cycle. I don't think it's wrong though. Like, they can beat some of these good teams. That's just like my preference, my personal, like, if I were in charge of decision-making with this team, like, my preference would not be to beat some good teams and be in the middle. Like, I would want to actually compete at a high level. And I think, you know, in order to make some changes to get there, it's very difficult with the salaries that you have kind of backing up the books and just like not being able to really acquire a star level player. That's really what they need to do, is get like a true A1 star. And it's very difficult to do that. And it's even more difficult from the position that they're in with, you know, very crowded cap sheet and with, you know, not enough in the asset trove for multiple chances in the draft or chances for a high level pick in the draft. So, you know, like I said, I don't think that's necessarily wrong, because like, they clearly have talent on this roster. They've got some young, exciting players. I think there's a good chance that if they are able to get a decent haul for Caruso, and they are able to, you know, move off of Zach, whether it's now or next trade deadline, for at least not negative value, and you move on from DeMar. Like, you bring in the 11th pick this year, maybe you keep your pick next year. Like, that's a young core that I would be, you know, much more excited about than the current group, even if they kind of topped off at the same level, which I don't think is like that far out of the question, if you add in a few more young pieces that hit. So yeah, I mean, I just think that's kind of how you end up in the middle. Like, they are good enough to beat some of these teams. They are also bad enough to lose to some of them. And that's kind of how you end up in the middle. But I don't think it's all like negative. I know I've kind of made it sound that way. Like I said, I think you can kind of turn this thing around and maybe not get to a championship level, but set yourself up with a handful of good young players that can be a little more exciting and have a little bit more upside, in a way that would be pretty quick relative to the previous rebuild. But I also think that like it's possible and maybe preferable that they do a full on teardown, including moving off of Kobe and Io, as good as they've been. So yeah, I don't think it's all totally doom and gloom. I apologize if I made it sound that way, but there's clearly some talent on this roster. I think it just there needs to be a little bit more willingness to take some of the swings that they made when they first took over, and maybe not the same direction with those, but that kind of boldness and that kind of aggressiveness towards getting to a different destination, I think would help this team in a big way. And, you know, with the cap sheet the way it is, the kind of explanation that I gave as far as needing to move on from one of, if not both of, Zach and DeMar, like that could happen this year. And I think now you're set up for a little bit more excitement, a little bit more potential, and you know, the opportunity to keep your pick next year and then see where you're at with a little bit more talent on your roster.
Yeah, I think it's well said, and I agree. Like, the East is definitely not a murderer's row out there. I think the interesting thing that'll be tricky for them will be, like, the guys you mentioned that are kind of generating a lot of the wins right now, DeMar and Caruso, are maybe not long-term guys. So being able to flip into like a younger version of that and still kind of tread water would actually be really exciting if they can pull it off. Like, if they bring in Pat, use the 11 well, do something with the MLE, let DeMar walk, and then end up with 35 wins, I'd actually be way more happy with that than 39 wins with the group that's kind of built around some of these aging players. But I know we're short on time. You know, on behalf of Fred, Will, I'd just, you know, love to say thank you for coming on. You know, tell all the people where we can find you, what they should be reading, what they should be subscribing to on CHGO. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome to talk with you guys. You can find me on Twitter at @Will_Gottlieb. All my writing at allchgo.com. And of course, the CHGO Bulls podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube. We do a daily live show at 4 p.m. on YouTube. So if you want to talk about the Bulls and just every single day, you know where to find us. That is your daily Bulls coverage.
God bless you for trying to do that every day.
Will, you're the best, brother. You're the best, man. And I
appreciate you guys.
I can't say enough about everything you do. And as we bring the Big Red Bus in, go Bulls.
Go Bulls.